Andy White, you're an actor, you're a lyricist, you're a director, I'm assuming, you're a playwright, and you are the artistic director of the Looking Glass Theater.
More importantly, though, Austin, I'm your ride home.
This is true. You're also my driver and fluffer. So, what don't you do? Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 393, Multitasking Actors.
Into the river the barges would come, the mighty North Woods now turn to lumber. Three sailed ships from across the Great Lakes soon fill the river with
whatever man makes. Those people keep coming, so keep those mills humming, sweep it all.
Into the river.
Since moving to Chicago 3 years ago, I continue to meet actors who do more than just act. We'll hear from Cindy Gold, the professor of theater and head of acting at Northwestern University, in a few minutes. But first up is Andy White, the artistic director of Looking Glass Theater and currently playing Charles Darwin in the Looking Glass production of In the Garden, A Darwinian Love Story. You're listening to Into the River from Andy's musical Eastland, for which he wrote the book and lyrics. And as Andy drove me home last night, we talked about the fun and frequently the necessity of doing it all. What's interesting about, I mean, this is going to be an episode about multitasking actors. It feels like Chicago is lousy with people who do everything. Was that always a thing? Did you go into the theater because, oh, I like to write, or oh, I like to act, or I like to do it all, or was it born of necessity?
At Looking Glass, we have, well, you know, I think most of us, yes, did start in with like, oh, I'm going to be an actor. Certainly that was I didn't think of myself as a director, didn't really think of myself as a writer. I think that's probably the case with my colleagues too. Most of them saw themselves as one thing as opposed to a multidisciplined career ahead. But for better and for worse, and it really is both, I think we have cultivated amongst ourselves a sense that, you know what, you can do these other things. When we were at Northwestern, we took classes with really great professors like Frank Galati and Mary Zimmerman and other people who said, look, you know, you can adapt a novel, you can adapt a poem, you can adapt a biography and turn it into performance. And so we got used to thinking of ourselves as creators of not just actors or directors, but even as like conceivers of a piece. Mm-hmm. And so
content creators, as we say now in the digital
exactly
age.
Exactly, yes. Right. Content creator, yeah. Creationists.
Yeah.
and so we and sometimes those things turn out better than others, but we have sort of encouraged each other to develop those other disciplines and or at least take a pass at them. And so now as a consequence, Looking Glass is an ensemble of people, almost all of whom have, you know, at some point written something, written
right.
a draft or written an adaptation or written a play, and a lot of us have directed, and a lot of us, I don't have the numbers right now, but the proportion of ensemble members who have actually directed is quite high.
Well, and you have designers as well,
yeah.
who have done all of these things as well.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right, yeah, so
I mean, what's phenomenal about that is that it's more examples of actors taking back the night, not just waiting for the next job to come along, but actually creating their own work and helping other ensemble members to create work for the community.
And that was, you know, I don't think that wasn't our mission, but that certainly was the intent. I think as soon as we all graduated college, we all immediately felt like, oh crap. We're at the mercy of the casting directors and the directors of the play, and the, you know, whereas when we had done Alice at college, that was sort of the first experiment in content creation or like Taking Back the Night or whatever. Like
yeah.
That was David Schwimmer going, I want to produce this play, I want these actors, we're going to do it and we're going to make it happen. You know, he threw in his bar mitzvah money or whatever to make it happen, and so, but the idea that it was really refreshing to feel like, you know what, we're not just going to be waiting to get cast by these other people. We're going to go ahead and take it into our own hands to create the work. And that's sort of the great thing about starting your own company is, like, you're essentially saying, we're taking the reins of the work that we're going to create.
Well, and you're playing Charles Darwin right now in the garden.
Wait, what?
Yes.
Are you serious?
Yes. And you're doing very well.
Whoa, crap!
But you said this was the first acting gig for you in a while, mm-hmm. because you've been busy with the administrative tasks, yes. of being the artistic director, but one of the artistic leadership of Looking Glass. How?
Don't forget the fluffing.
And don't forget in addition to the fluffing, was that by choice? Is that by necessity? You have to focus on the one job, and that is, so you've had to put the acting to the side, or is it? How does one feed the other, or does it?
It's more by necessity, in the sense that the administrative job is quite full time, and so it doesn't leave a lot of room or time to be in things. Or do anything.
Yeah.
That said, I was able to complete Eastland and get that up and running. But this that's a function, actually, of the fact that we sort of do have this trio of leadership. So Phil Smith is our producing artistic director, and Heidi Stillman is artistic director of the work. So when one of us is in a show or heavily engaged in a show in some capacity, either as a performer or a creator or whatever, then the others can sort of swing in and bear some of the other administrative burden. And our staff is great, and our executive director, Rachel Kraft, is magnificent. So we're able to find ways to do that.
And when you say you started out as an actor, did it? Yeah. Did the administrative aspect of being the artistic director, did that come easily to you? Was that something you had to learn?
That's something that, again, like we encouraged each other to artistically to branch out into these other ways. We were our own staff, and even though it wasn't something I didn't see myself as a grant writer, for Christ's sakes, but yeah. That's what I did for 3 years, and so we learned that.
Yeah.
Christine Dunford and I learned how to write grants and got pretty good at it, and good enough to actually sort of, help get the company started.
Right.
Larry DeStasi was our first bookkeeper, and he didn't know how to do that, but he taught himself. So David Kirshner became, he was a lighting, he was a director and an actor, but he sort of taught himself lighting design and also how to be an electrician, and almost killed himself. But I guess sort of the same philosophy of you can do this thing artistically, also we felt applied administratively, to a more or less of a degree. Some, we're not all of us good at everything.
Right.
Thank God.
And that's something you learn along the way, going, yeah. Okay, I was terrible at that.
Not my strength.
Right.
Yeah,
don't have me do that again.
Right. And being artistic director was, I did it 90 to 92, and I wasn't the first ensemble member to do that. So you do learn from the people who go before you. And I feel like I'm still, I think David Catlin, I think about all the time, who was my immediate predecessor. And I always try and replicate his body. Just hot and sexy.
Well, that's good. It's nice to have a goal.
Yeah.
And you guys at Looking Glass won the Tony for Outstanding Regional Theater in the country in 2011. And I asked Phil, I'll ask you the same question I asked Phil Smith. Is that solely because of you?
It is. It's me. I mean, it's weird that they didn't actually call it the Andy. Actually, they didn't just change the name of the award. No. There are a lot of reasons that I think we got the award, but I have to say that two of our ensemble members, Mary Zimmerman and David Catlin, their work traveled across the country, and because it's made up, the American Theater Wing is made up of theater critics from all over the country.
Yeah.
They had exposure to their work, to Looking Glass work through Mary and David's pieces, Looking Glass, Alice Church, Six Different Cities, The Arabian Nights, Metamorphoses, a bunch of different, The Secret in the Wings, Mary Zimmerman pieces had traveled and been seen by, I think, a lot of the theater critics who were like, oh, who is this cool theater company? If we hadn't done those tours, even though we weren't always part of those tours, the company wouldn't have had that kind of national exposure.
And do you feel like Are there times when you go, oh, let me stop being the artistic director for a little while. I got to get back to my acting.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Daily.
I mean, you know, actually, you asked before about how it feeds it. I have to say that doing this show has been so incredibly gratifying and replenishing because it's been so long and because it's been since I've never done a role like this. And I've never just had such a deeply satisfying part. And it really does... you know, I think it does fill the well a bit because the administrative stuff is fantastic, but it's not as, you know, there are times when it's actually very satisfying when you feel like you're doing a great job. There's nothing better, no matter what your job is. But I don't always feel like I'm doing such a great job. So at least now I'm doing a play where I feel like, hey, you know, this feels mostly successful.
Yeah, I think it is. More of the forgiven rain sweeps it all up again.
Sweeps it all. I'm Nina Totenberg, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This summer of 2014, you can see us in the UK for two more weeks until June 28th, performing the complete works of William Shakespeare, Abridged, Revised. And then in August, we will return to the Pleasance Theatre at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, performing the European premiere of the complete history of comedy, Abridged, for 4 weeks. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. Now we'll hear from Cindy Gold, who's not only a professor of theater and head of acting at Northwestern University, she's also a Joseph Jefferson Award-winning actress here in Chicago, who's playing four roles with me and Andy in The Garden, a Darwinian love story. I asked Cindy whether she considers herself a teacher who acts or an actor who teaches.
I'm an actor-teacher, teacher-actor. Right. It's hard for me to differentiate the two. Even on my taxes, it's very difficult.
Well, and again, it's a kind of a false question. Why should you? I mean, one feeds the other, right? One is part of the other.
Yes, I mean, the only reason I even know that is that my accountant is always saying, okay, let's decide what should that be for. Every book I read, every movie I see, every play I do, every dinner I have with someone is potentially either someone who might employ me as an actress or someone I might employ at Northwestern or, you know, it's...
But when you were a kid doing plays, you went, I'm going to be an actress, not I'm going to be a teacher.
Well, yeah, I started out as a dancer. I took ballet when I was about 5. I started, and when I was 16-ish, maybe a little younger, you know, my tutu became a 4-4, and I suddenly realized, I'm not going to be a dancer, and took acting a lot more seriously. But it was always performance. Although, I think when I was very little, I wanted to be a teacher. That was what I wanted to be, really, yeah.
Okay.
So I have everything.
So you are, I mean, so you are kind of living the dream, living the childhood dream.
Living the dream, yes.
Was there a point at which it became clear that not one or the other was going to pay the bills? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I was living in New York and I had, you know, been on, I had like a under 5 regular nurse thing on Guiding Light and I was working in an office, and I was selling weekly readers and, you know, nightmare. And paying, you know, more for my apartment than a human being should, and broken up with a boy, a certain boy, and just very depressed. And I thought, all right, I'm moving home to my parents in Florida. Mommy, Daddy, I'm almost 30. I'm not going to be an actress. Okay. That was a big thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize at the time that you could have a career as an actor outside of New York. You know,
you thought New York was it?
That was it.
Yeah, okay. There,
I didn't really understand regional theater. I certainly didn't think there was... I just didn't think there was a... So I moved... I went home to Miami, and I started teaching. That's how I started teaching at the New World School for the Arts had just opened. And that was my first real teaching gig, and I loved it.
Interesting.
I mean, it was just like, it was a way to get a job, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I'll teach something, you know.
But what did you love about it? Just the fact that it was something you could do and they would pay you for? Or was there something about being in the classroom that just
fed you in a, like your acting feeds you?
Yeah, it was both. I mean, it was such a shock that I would get paid enough money to do something that I actually enjoyed rather than selling weekly readers. Right. You know, it was a shock.
Right.
And so there was that. And then there was also the jazzed part about, you know, being in the classroom. It just felt, I don't know, like a glove. It just fit me.
And you were teaching acting.
Yeah, it was teaching acting. It was the first year of the New World School for the Arts, or maybe the second year. And I knew someone from my old days being down there in high school who said, hey, we need an acting teacher. You know, it was just luck.
And you have your BFA from Boston University. You were there 3 years before I got there.
Yes, yes. I paved the way for you.
Yes, you did. And you, but you were, at this point when you're teaching, you only had your BFA. You did, but then you went on and got your MFA.
Right. After a little while down in Miami, I don't know, I sort of thought, well, let's legitimize this. I think that was I met a guy who said, you ought to do an MFA in acting. Actually, I think originally my idea was directing.
Okay.
Because I thought, well, I already have a BFA in acting. Why should I get an MFA in acting? But then I did find a program, and it was affiliated with a big regional theater. And so I got my master's degree after I started teaching.
Yeah. That was the MFA program at Alabama Shakes.
That's right.
Where we also, I have performed.
Yeah.
Yeah, but again, after you.
Yeah.
When you have paved the way. Is there, when you're teaching, do you make discoveries in your teaching because you have to figure out how to teach it to the next generation? Do you make discoveries in your teaching and you go, oh, crap, I never thought about that in my own acting? Do you know what I'm asking?
Yes. In fact, all the time, something will happen in the classroom and I'll think, oh, I could use that. Or something will happen in the theater when I'm acting that I go, I must remember to show this or explain this or explore this more than anything with the kids.
Yeah. What just happened is a teachable moment.
Yeah, yes. And I frequently, I'll think, okay, now, what's the way that it doesn't, because I'm always second-guessing myself. To this day, I still think someone's going to come and ask for my hall pass at school.
And revoke it.
And revoke it. Yeah, you know, yeah. I'm always trying to justify. So I am in rehearsals for the professional plays thinking of ways that I can connect the two, but there's very little need for that because it happens so naturally.
Right.
And often it comes, a teachable moment comes out of me not understanding what to do. Like if I get a part, I just don't understand.
Right.
And I have to actually fall back on that thing called technique, which I think is there for when you get something you truly don't understand.
Right.
That's when you fall back on that. So I have to like logically figure it out. And then I think, okay, perfect. Right. I just figured something else out. You know, I'll show the kids.
So gun to your head, you had to be an actor or a teacher. What would you pick or could you?
I have a gun to my head. How dangerous! And
well, we are in America.
That's true. There's an open carry law. It depends. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Am I at a regional theater where where I'm getting paid a good salary enough to live and playing all sorts, and I am the character actress at that theater.
Mm-hmm.
Am I there? Maybe I say, as long as I can teach occasionally, you know, the interns, the apprentices, I really think I wouldn't be able to be just an actress. I truly, not that there's anything wrong with that,
no.
But I don't find the same kind of fulfillment. And if I was only teaching, I would certainly miss acting terribly. I truly believe they are the same in many, many, many ways. And one makes me better at the other and vice versa. And luckily, I have, in the last 19 years, I think, been a part of a movement at Northwestern where I sort of helped to train the higher-ups in admin, that there was a need for that kind of skill set, that it wasn't just an academic that could be tenured. Because I was tenured as an artist, which is an artist who teach. I teach what I do, and I do what I teach, and that's Northwestern.
That's a BFA program?
No, it's a BA. It's a liberal arts program.
Liberal arts. Okay, mm-hmm. So having been through the BFA program at BU, what do you think about the value of a BFA conservatory program versus a BA program?
I took the job at Northwestern under completely false pretenses. I wanted the job, so I said, oh, a BA or a BS at the time. It wasn't even a BA. Now it's a BA.
That's good. Referred to acting as a science. Yeah.
It was in the School of Speech, and it was a Bachelor of Science. And I was like, yes, excellent idea. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking, well, this is ridiculous. But I have drunk the Kool-Aid. After almost 19 years, I have figured out that, oh, my God, the degree to have as an undergraduate is a liberal arts degree. The best actors are people who like to read and like to travel and are interested in reading the newspaper and finding what's happening in politics. They just make the best actors. When I graduated from Boston University, God love them, I didn't know the first thing. I knew how to do my makeup. I knew something about the history of theater. I knew, a little bit about Stanislavski, and I knew what was on Broadway.
Right.
I didn't know anything about politics or anything social, anything of the humanities, nothing. And it took me a long time to retrace those steps and figure out, I loved to read. I wasn't a bad student. This is good. I applied to Northwestern University and did not get accepted. I did not have the grades, the GPA, or the testing to go to Northwestern, the program at which I am now the head of the acting. It's very sweet. But BU accepted me because it wasn't based on academics at all. It was a true conservatory. And while, thank God I loved my BA and MFA training, I'm so grateful for it. It got me where I am today. I truly believe that the liberal arts, using the art in theater as a liberal art, using it as a humanity to teach something about humanity, is to me the greatest of all. I tell everyone, oh my God, if you want to go on and get an MFA, do that, but just study life and people and the world and philosophy, and and the rest of it will follow.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your multitasks via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, multi-acting Tasker Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand, and also this week by Andre Pluse and Ben Sussman. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Matthew McNiff. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Nina Totenberg from National Public Radio, and thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 393 1179ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. We've worked together now. I think I can safely say we've become friends. I think friends enough that where I could say to you, you have a magnificent collection of stripy boxers.
Thank you.
Dr. Seussian, almost.
Yeah,
where do you get them?
Yeah. The Gap really is my go-to source.
And horizontal stripes. A lot of guys can't get away with horizontal, but they really work on you.
Thank you.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.